chaka, hooka, 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 chaka, hooka, 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 chaka, hooka, 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 chaka, hooka, hooka, hooka.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize.
This song is awesome. Welcome back to the Saturday show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Michelle Bodkin there, Jake Hatch here. So this song obviously kind of got put back into the, I guess, public consciousness because of Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, did you guys know Guardians of the Galaxy came out 10 years ago?
Really?
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it.
Michelle.
I'm not a movie watcher, though.
I'm not that much either, but come on.
I have not seen that movie, but I know that this is associated with that. When I hear this song...
You haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it.
I'm stunned.
The list of movies I haven't seen versus the ones have seen is longer.
Alex, as you get to know Michelle, you'll realize that she's right about this. She doesn't watch a lot of movies. I'll make a reference. And I'm not very good at referencing movies, and I've caught her multiple times myself, so.
Yeah. Although, usually I get references to stuff, but then it's funny, or I'll even reference stuff, but it's like, oh yeah, and by the way, I've never seen this, but I'm making this reference because I know it exists. No, never seen it. I associate it with, you're too young, you will not know what I'm talking about, you might know what I'm talking about. I think her name was Alyssa Flockhart, and she had a TV show.
Calista Flockhart?
Yes. There was like this famous scene with like a baby dancing that everybody like freaked out about because it was so weird. I think one of the first like digitized animated sort of things, and it at least at the time looked really real, but it like freaked people out. But it was dancing to that song.
Okay,
I vaguely
remember this. I know the one thing I know about Calista Flockhart. She's married to Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
That's one thing I know about. But it sounds vaguely familiar. So.
Yeah, it was like a whole, and I don't remember or understand it because I was probably like 6 or 7. But like I remember looking at that baby and hearing the song and doing it. That's
Ally McBeal,
Ooga, that's right.
Ooga Chaka baby dance. I just googled it on YouTube. So there you go. So she was okay. All right.
That's what I associate that song with.
Okay. All right. Let's see. So on Ally McBeal, the dancing baby showed up as a symbol of Ally's fear about her biological clock, and it is that dancing baby that's like that famous meme now.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's where it comes from. Hey, good, nice pull on you. Well done there.
See?
So that song, it'll always make me laugh because my wife and I started dating, we're 10 years now, and when that movie came out, I was super excited to see it. I like the Marvel Universe. That whole run through there was great, and I was so excited to go see this movie, and she's like, what movie are we going to see? This is like so dumb. Like,
are you making me do?
That's exactly. Like, it was totally. And so we go down and sit and watch it. We walk out, and she's like, okay, I need to apologize. That was awesome.
And that's what I've heard.
We've always loved that movie since, like, when we were dating. But she was so out on that when we were walking in. She's like, what are we seeing here? Like, what are we doing? Like,
I really like you this much?
Bingo.
Do I need to figure my way out of this relationship?
I made it a solid decade. I'm good. Like,
we've done
something positive here. I've got 3 kids now. Like, some worked out there, but nonetheless, but yeah, so that will always make me laugh. All right. Let's get back to sports here. Now, I've been promising to play this audio for you guys, just kind of keep the hilarity up. We'll get to that, and we'll flip over to college basketball here in a moment, but Darko Rajakovic, he is the head coach of the Toronto Raptors. Now, Jazz trounced the Raptors last night, and he made these comments. This comes from, I think, Tuesdays when he made them. That the night before, the Raptors were in L.A. to take on the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
They were in a good game, back and forth, but the free throw disparity, you want to talk about bad officiating? In the fourth quarter, Michelle, the fourth quarter of this game, 23 free throws for the Los Angeles Lakers, 2 for the Toronto Raptors.
Oh, boy.
Anthony Davis scored 20 of his 41 points in that quarter, and I think more than half of those points came at the line. Like, abysmal. Absolutely abysmal.
Oh.
And let's just put it this way. Darko Rajakovic is going to pay $25,000. That's the fine he's been issued for these comments. Here you go.
What happened tonight, this is completely BS. This is shame. Shame for the referees, shame for the league to allow this. 23 free throws for them, and we get two free throws in the fourth quarter. Like, how to play the game. I understand respect for all stars and all of that, but we have star players on our team as well. How's possible that Scottie Barnes, who is all-star caliber player in this league, he goes every single time to the rim with force, trying to get to the rim without flopping and not trying to get foul calls. He gets two free throws for a whole game. How's that possible? How are you going to explain that to me? They had to win tonight? If that's the case, just let us know so we don't show up for the game. Just give them a win. But that was not fair tonight. And this is not happening first time for us. Scottie Barnes is going to be all-star. He's going to be the face of this league. And what's happening over here during whole season, I've been holding you back. It's a complete crap.
It's a complete crap.
I agree with you, Gru.
Nice, well done. Yes, well, nice pull. But here's the thing. Officiating, yes, it's not ideal. And when something as egregious as that, it's pretty glaring. And it bugs people. It affects the integrity in people's minds of the games themselves because it's the Los Angeles Lakers and the Toronto Raptors. Well, guess what? When the Lakers get that friendly whistle, everybody's like, oh, great. Look at L.A. getting another, another break here.
It casts a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, and that's the concern you got to have. So it just made me chuckle because it's complete crap. Such BS. But
shame on your family. Shame on everybody.
Exactly. I'm going to disagree with him on the fact I don't necessarily think Scottie Barnes is the future face of the NBA.
Yeah,
but
I don't know about that.
That's the only one I would take issue with him saying in terms of his comments there, because Scottie Barnes is a good player, but face of the NBA?
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You have to get to a bigger market if you want to be the face of the NBA.
Fraud needs to go to LA, get those whistles.
Jeez, yes. That or Miami or New York. One of the hotbeds, as it were. But
the favorites.
Yeah, and crazy stuff. By the way, on the college basketball front, let's just kind of keep with the officiating theme here. The Utah men, Thursday night.
Yeah. Woohoo!
90-44? Like I checked in at halftime on that game, so I had other stuff going, and I'm like, okay, score's pretty close here. So close. Then I tuned in and watched the second half, and I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, because they just ran away. It was the second worst margin of defeat in UCLA program history. Like, Mick Cronin, dude, like, come on, figure it out.
And I mean, the interesting thing from my vantage point was, even though the game was close for a good chunk of it,
yeah,
it never was really that close.
Sure. And
Utah always had a handle on that game.
Sure. Utah had them like at an arm's length through that first half. But in the second half, it was like a Ferrari pulling away from a Pinto.
they definitely turned on the afterburners. They got hot with the threes. They really, really pulled away with that one. It was pretty impressive. You could kind of tell, I think, they were playing a little bit angry and taking some things out that happened against the Arizona schools the week before on poor UCLA.
And that's why I wanted to ask you about it, because it feels like to me, they were getting some of the frustration out, and obviously they're going to head to Stanford tomorrow. And Stanford's an interesting team because they scored 100 points on Arizona, speaking of the Cardinal, but they also don't, like, defend.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird – we'll see what happens on tomorrow. But do you feel like – Is this Utah men's basketball team, are they more of what they showed against the Arizona schools, or are they capable of doing what they did against UCLA, Michelle?
I think the UCLA game is more in line with what they are.
Okay.
You look at their wins and the people that they've competed against, and yes, they've lost some other games outside of Arizona or the Arizona schools, but those have been very good teams that they've lost to, and they're continuing to still go on and win. Those losses were also, I think, closer than what they encountered with the Arizona schools. Those kind of got away from them. And I don't know if it's – I mean, Utah really has a pretty interesting history on the road in Arizona. I don't know what it is, but both of those schools on the road, for whatever reason, have always and forever given Utah fits. And I just don't know if there wasn't even a psychological element there, that it's like, we know that this round of games has always been a problem and we don't want it to be a problem. And they just came out a little bit stiff and they didn't do what they normally do.
Well, the kind of the funny thing was, I think back on it, so what Utah did to UCLA was kind of what Arizona did to them on Saturday, Saturday before, because the first half was really tight. Utah was hanging in there and mm-hmm. Arizona felt like they had control, like similar to Utah on third. Like,
yeah.
They had control in the first half, but the road team is hanging in there. So in this case, Utah at Arizona and then UCLA at Utah. But in the second half, it was like, yeah, that was cute. What we're going to do now is it's over. Like, we're just going to run away from you, and this ain't going to be close. And I am interested to see, how Utah, if they can handle going on the road now. Learn your lessons, obviously, from that Arizona mm-hmm. trip. Can you go to Stanford tomorrow and win this game? Now, Stanford, they are who they are. I do think Utah should win that one, but I am interested, as you kind of mentioned, like the road for Utah has been an interesting place.
I mean, that's kind of the Pac-12 in general. Road wins are just hard to get for anyone. As we saw, Arizona tripped up on the road at Stanford, and Stanford's a pretty average team.
Sure.
Especially by comparison to what Arizona is capable of doing. And yet, that was like a, 25 point or 40 point? I forget how, it was a sizable win for Stanford.
Yes.
Which you would not think. You would think if they won, they just barely snuck it out. No, that was kind of a beatdown. So, it'll be interesting to see if Utah has a better handle of this one after kind of messing up on the road in Arizona.
Now, BYU is trying to get off the schneid today. They are in Orlando, Florida. They're taking on UCF. You can make a Book of Mormon reference if you want to there. But nonetheless, they leave it to me to bring that one up. But
I actually have seen that movie.
Have you?
I have seen that one. I don't remember it, but I've seen it.
Okay, there you go.
So there you go. There's one I have seen.
All right. So they are in action today. It's a 2:00 tip. So it's actually a mid-afternoon tip for BYU. Now, speaking of BYU, the road for them has not been fun. They are still 0-4 in the Big 12. They're 0-4 on the road this season. And Jay Drew pointed this out in the Deseret News. BYU's losing streak on the road extends back 7 games back to last season. Like, they have not had a lot of success on the road. Now, UCF, on paper, they are the only team that was picked to finish worse in the Big 12 this year than BYU. But Wednesday night, little do you know that number 3 Kansas goes to Orlando themselves. UCF forces 18 turnovers and grinds out a 65-60 win over Kansas. Court storming. The Orlando Sentinel calls it the biggest win in UCF basketball history, and I'd have a hard time disagreeing because it's a pretty young school, relatively. Mm-hmm. I am interested to see how BYU handles this. And by the way, the other thing about this UCF, okay, you're coming off like the high of highs.
Yeah.
Can you keep that level of play there? That's a big question mark.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I think you look at, right? Like, BYU obviously has lost a couple of games now when they've kind of been cruising for the most part this season. Is that in their head or does it motivate them? So that's one thing you kind of look at. And then yes, on the UCF side of things, do you use that win to motivate you and propel you forward, or do you let that get in your head and you get ahead of yourselves and you overlook someone that's more than capable of handling you?
Well, the biggest thing for BYU in this game, this happened at Utah, this happened at Baylor, is the turnover issues. Remember last year, the whole storyline of BYU season was they could not take care of the basketball. We're talking routinely 15, 16, 17, 18 turnovers in a game. When you do that, you're giving free points away. Baylor Tuesday night, it was 14 turnovers. Baylor had 18 points off of those turnovers. Utah, I'm sure the numbers were somewhere in that realm. I have to look them up again. This UCF team, they're not that good offensively. They shoot 32% from the field three-point-wise. Like, this is not a high-flying offense that Johnny Dawkins has got there in Orlando. But what they do is they turn you over.
Mm-hmm.
They average 16.7 turnovers forced per game. Like, they are among the nation's leaders. And BYU's penchant for turning it over, if they don't clean that up, this could go exactly the same way all the other road games have gone this year. Now, there's only 2 of them, but they could lose another road game and then be off to an 0-3 start in the Big 12 and suddenly find themselves thinking, ooh, could the bottom really fall out on us all of a sudden after a 12-1 start? I know that's early to say that,
yeah,
but
I mean, it's sometimes just really hard to predict how these teams will respond, especially,
sure,
you know, when you have been faced with some adversity that you did not experience early on. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be a very make or break type situation. And while it sounds hyperbolic, I think it's a very real possibility for this BYU team. If they don't figure out how to use that slide as their power rather, correct, than a continued kryptonite, if that makes sense.
Well, and the crazy thing about this BYU team is they shoot the three at an extremely high level. They actually lead the nation still in 3-point field goals made. Like, of all 362 Division I teams, the most 3-pointers made by a single team resides in Provo, Utah right now. Get back to doing that. Get back to sharing the basketball. The thing about it is Cincinnati, when they lost to Cincinnati, the final 10 minutes were an absolute bleep show. Mm-hmm. Just BYU fell apart. They put a guy who had made 9 three-pointers on the bench for almost 6 minutes of game time and didn't, like, and the excuse from Mark Pope afterwards was, we were keeping with rotations. 6 minutes of rotation? No.
He wasn't in foul trouble like that.
Trevin Nell had made 9 of 13 three-pointers, Michelle.
What you doing,
he
baby?
He had 27 points. He was absolutely rocking and rolling. The 10-minute and 23-second mark, they were down by 1 to Cincinnati. He sat until the 4-minute and 20-some-odd minute mark, and in that time, Cincinnati mounted, I think it was a 15-2 run, and that put the game to bed.
Remember how we talked earlier in the show uh-huh. about Will Hardy being flexible and
that's
cutting your nose to spite your face if that's the reasoning you're giving.
And to double down on it, they didn't bring any players out after the game to speak to the media. It was a pretty weak move. Mark Pope spoke for 5 minutes. I think we got a grand total of 5 questions in. It wasn't pretty, but nonetheless, get back to doing what you're doing, because after that Cincinnati game, it felt like that was a game where they kind of got all kind of caught up in the moment. They were all, mm-hmm. we had guys shooting 40-footers that you're like, okay, why are you taking that shot in that circumstance? Like, just forcing it. Against Baylor, they started to share the ball a little bit more, and there were times it still got stuck a little bit. I want to see BYU get back to doing what they've been doing most of the year, and that is sharing the basketball, mm-hmm. moving it and finding open shots for their teammates, because when they've done that, they've been very, very good. It feels like Big 12 play kind of has gotten them caught a little bit. Like, oh, pressure mount, like, they need to relax a little bit here.
Right.
And I think it's a similar circumstance to Utah here going on the road. Understand, okay, yeah, you're playing in a hostile venue. We get all that. Mm-hmm. But go play your basketball. Play your style.
Yeah. Yeah. Go do what you've been doing. In a way, like, you went across the country and played some of the best teams, and you did a better job handling that than mm-hmm. you did just down the street.
Sure.
Just relax. Just relax, breathe. It's not that deep. Just go do your thing.
Yeah. By the way, give a quick shout out. We had to break here. Utah State, those guys are doing something that's
really
cool.
They're balling.
Yeah. They're 15-1. They upset Colorado State the other night. They're ranked 20th in the country here. And to consider they had, like, 0 points and 0 rebounds, like this team, you want to know about building a team on the fly? That's what Danny Sprinkle has done. It's pretty incredible stuff what they're doing up there in Logan. So keep an eye on them as well. And get some good basketball here locally. It's fun. Like, a lot of good teams. The hope is that they can kind of get themselves back to doing what they've been doing early on this season. All right, so coming up next, we'll get to 5 minutes of. We will talk about what's going on in college football. Some crazy news this week. I never thought it would happen. Nick Saban has stepped down. They've already hired his replacement. It's a name many of you are familiar with. And DeBoer. What's his first name?
Kalen DeBoer.
I want to say Kevin DeBoer. That's
not
wrong.
Right.
Yeah, Kalen DeBoer.
It's close, but it's not right.
Already been hired as his replacement. We'll talk about all that next, right here on The Saturday Show. Michelle, this is also from Guardians of the Galaxy, by the way.
I think of this as Crystal Lisa's beam routine last year.
It is, you're right. But this is also from that. By the way, our good friend Clint O'Pete sent this in. It's like, one day, Vodka and KSL Sports will see Guardians of the Galaxy and be like, oh, that's where all those memes and GIFs come from.
I mean, I've seen them and I know where they come from. I just haven't watched the movie.
Yeah.
I have heard that, actually, I've... I've actually listened to the soundtrack. I have not seen the movie, and the soundtrack is bomb.
Yeah, that first movie in particular.
Some good oldies. This song, fire. The last song, fire. So good.
They did a really good job with that. All right, let's get to some of the topics we've not had a chance to touch on quite yet. Let's start on the college football universe. Trust me, when I first saw this news come down, I'm like, this is a joke. Who's got a clown account that's doing this? Nick Saban is resigning. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, he and 72 years old, and as some people like to call him, Nicky Satan, he's out.
He's out. He's done. You know, I think the first clue that was going down was his defensive coordinator, actually.
Kevin Steele.
Stepped down. And Kevin, ironically enough, is someone that I've met and talked to in person before, actually with Mike Norvell, believe it or not.
All right.
It was quite the meeting, a Senior Bowl meeting, actually, meeting of the minds. But I think that was kind of clue, looking back on it, clue number one, because Kevin Steele and Nick Saban go way, way back. Mm-hmm. Kevin has some amazing stories about Nick Saban. And and Nick followed behind shortly thereafter. And it's one of those things that kind of makes sense, but it kind of blows your mind too, because it just feels like he's been here forever and been the standard of college football and the kind of model that everybody else has tried to also achieve and replicate. So to have him not be a part of it, it's going to be kind of different.
Well, it is. And that's the thing about it is this is a guy who he's the GOAT. Like, there, you look at every metric you could measure coaches against. Like, it's like, no, he owns that one. He owns that. He never had a losing season in all of his head coaching career. Toledo, Michigan State, LSU, NFL aside, but in college,
yeah,
never. The worst he ever did was two, 500 seasons with Michigan State. Like,
I mean, okay, if you want to like split hairs, he sort of had a losing season his first season at Alabama when they took away some of the wins for cheating.
Yeah.
But if you don't take those, it was a 7-6 season. So,
yeah. Six national championships in 17 years at Alabama. That's just over a shade over averaging one every three seasons. Like, incredible stuff there. He also did win the national title at LSU. So he got seven natties under his belt. It's not out of the realm to say that was earth-shattering news in the college football universe, mm-hmm. because that just, it changes everything.
It does change everything. And aside from coaches now moving around and shuffling around, there's this new interesting thing where the transfer portal opens up for Alabama and Washington and who knows who else, because Washington hires away some, like, so it's a whole chain and ripple effect through college football that really is going to change up and shake up some things.
They've already hired his replacement. Kalen DeBoer is leaving Washington after leading them to the national championship game. He is taking over at Alabama, and with that guy's track record, who thinks it's going to slow down anytime soon for Alabama? Is he 104-19 and as a head coach or some crazy number?
Something crazy like
and
that.
And DeBoer has worked his way up from literally the bottom. He worked at Sioux Falls in the NAIA. He's worked at the FCS. He's worked at the G5. He's worked at the Power 5. He has worked his way up that ladder. This is, a lot of people say you don't want to be the guy that replaces the guy. And yes, it'll be interesting to see how he handles the post-Saban era at Alabama. But in terms of people who have just found ways to have success no matter what, I think you could do a lot worse than having hired DeBoer as your replacement for Nick.
Totally. I think Kalen DeBoer is a really good coach. I think the actually more interesting thing to watch is the NIL thing, though, because there has been some speculation that while Alabama does well in NIL, they don't have quite the deep pockets that some of the others do.
Correct.
And so, you know, does that put a cap on the success that we've seen Alabama typically have, because they're now in a position where they can't compete with others the way that they used to, because they kind of monopolized
Correct.
that whole situation before it was legal. We'll just put it that way. The stories are out there.
Well, and they also said
follow the poker chips.
They also
said
that their NIL thing was all built around kind of like Saban, mm-hmm. like it was like taking him for granted. Like Saban's the guy, and he gave like zero indications of what was happening. He was interviewing defensive coordinator candidates the same day.
Yeah.
He decided, you know what? I'm out. I got to give him props, by the way. This is like the John Stockton thing. I don't want like a run through a schedule where everybody can celebrate me. Random Wednesday afternoon, hey, team meeting, guys, I'm retiring. I'll help with the transition, but thanks, and I'll see you down the road.
Adios. Well, maybe catch you on college game day where I'll likely be a host or something.
He's going to replace Lee Corso.
That's so funny because my parents and I were talking about that last night, and that was our speculation too.
It seems too natural, lovely and everything, and he's been great for that program. He's getting up there.
He is.
And Saban seems like a really natural guy to step into that role. Yes, is he going to be as eccentric as Lee Corso was?
No. Well, and here's the thing. I think you have Lee Corso step down. The headgear thing goes away at college game day.
Oh, come on. I want Nick to put on headgear. I'd die.
I just don't think even if his replacement is not Nick Saban, you can't have someone else do that.
It won't be the same. I expect to keep it going, though. I do think they will keep it going.
So do they have Pat McAfee do it? Because that's the only person I think would be appropriate to have do that.
We'll see if Pat sticks around for any significant period of time with ESPN.
Also that, but, you know, whatever.
Pat, by the way, Pat is awesome, but apparently he is like, him and ESPN are just butting heads at every turn all of a sudden.
He grew on me a little bit. I found myself liking him more than I thought I would, but he's still kind of a tough pill for me to swallow, to be honest.
The thing is, I think he's going to keep going is because ESPN needs him a heck of a lot more than he needs ESPN.
Oh, completely and totally. They got rid of all their people that were notable outside of him and like Holly Rowe and Kirk Herbstreit.
To make room for him, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
Nuts. Real quick, local note real quick I want to get to. Real Salt Lake has sent Jefferson Savarino to Botafogo. Did I get that right, Alex? You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's correct.
He's going back to Brazil. So he was with RSL. They sent him to Brazil. He won a ton of trophies there in Brazil. Came back. He's had a pretty good run with RSL a second time, but they are sending him right back to Brazil, which I assume is a move that he has welcomed and everything. I think both sides are happy with this. RSL preseason starts Monday. So,
oh my gosh, that is just crazy.
I knew you were going to react like that.
It never ceases to shock me how like quick their off season is. It goes by so fast that they are basically a nonstop sport.
You want me to double blow your mind?
Please do.
RSL season starts next month.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I always forget this, and then I remember it every year, and it's like, yeah, this is kind of absurd, but
they open up at Miami against Messi, and who else does Messi have around him now? Like
Luis Suarez.
Luis Suarez, that's who they just signed, yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Old Bite Everybody that he plays against is back in MLS.
Mm. Hey, but how awesome is it going to be when Luis Suarez comes into this league, makes it MLS Cup, and bites someone in MLS Cup final?
Please.
Picture perfect ending for Luis Suarez.
Please. And he's proverbially on his last legs because, like, dude is breaking down left and right. But he just bites into somebody
good
again.
Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, Luis Suarez. He's one of those, you know what I'm saying, like a competitor? I'll give Luis Suarez this. That dude competes. Does he cross the line with it? Abso-freaking-lutely. He bites people.
That dude. I totally forgot about that. And that was a very shocking storyline when that happened.
Him and Messi are in Miami together, so should be fun. I just don't want him to come to Salt Lake. I want to see Messi at Rio Tinto Stadium. That's all I want.
Maybe if there's another deep run in Open Cup
or
Leagues Cup, it may happen. But as of right now, RSL heading to Miami to open the season.
Yeah, so it should be fun there. Also, last night, the Utah Royals had the NWSL draft, and seven players drafted, correct?
Yes.
They had 9 picks in the draft. They traded 2 of them away amidst it. But they did bring in 2 former BYU players. Brecken Mozingo was their 4th overall selection, and Olivia Smith Griffiths, she was in the 2nd round, I believe.
Second or third round.
Yes. This Royals roster, and I'll give Carly Nelson had a really, really funny tweet. Did you see this, by the way?
I did. I retweeted it.
So Carly Nelson played at Timpanogos High School, and then she ended up playing at Utah.
Okay.
She said, did I get transferred to the Royals or BYU?
Oh, that's great.
She was having some.
We love some good rivalry humor.
Because they had Michaela Clough already on the roster. They also have Michelle Vasconcelos, also on the former BYU soccer players. You draft Mozingo. You draft Olivia Smith-Griffiths. I believe Olivia Wade-Katoa was in contention for the Royals to take, but she ends up getting taken by Portland. There's going to be a strong local representation on this Royals roster, which is it needs to happen.
We love that.
Take advantage of that. But I also like the fact that they haven't gone all in on just saying, hey, we're building around the local. Like, they've actually gone out and gotten some really good players. Their top overall selection was from North Carolina, if I recall correctly.
Yes, Ali Centaur.
Yeah, and she's a fantastic player in her own right. So
it'll be fun.
We'll see.
That'll be fun to watch. It's good to have them back.
It is good to have them back. I do have a concern that this first year people are going to be like, why are they're struggling? They're an expansion franchise. Let's give them a little bit of a runway here, y'all. Like,
need some breathing room to work out some of the kinks.
Yeah, but Amy Rodriguez is doing a good job, I think, putting together this roster. So we'll see what happens. All right, we will take a timeout here. We'll come back on the other side. Get some final thoughts on today's program. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show. Hope you all are doing well on this Saturday morning. Great question here, by the way, you sent it to me. Ryan Van Wagenen is a dear friend of the station. Loves listening to the shows and everything. Sends me this question. He says, Jake, will Dallin Hall have more assists or turnovers today? If you pick the right answer, maybe I'll invite you to golf again this summer. Now, this is high stakes.
Oh.
Because Ryan's got connections to golf courses I can only dream of getting on.
Well, sir, you better guess right.
I'm going to say more assists than turnovers. Now, Dallin Hall has been in a little bit of a slump, but the slump has been more on his shooting and his shot selection. Like, I talked about that 40-footer that was thrown up against Cincinnati, kind of just like, what? Where did that come from? Yeah, it was Dallin Hall. Like, it was like, you're the point guard, dude. Facilitate here. We need to clean this up a little bit here, but we'll see. I do think, Ryan, to answer your question, I do think that he will have more assists than turnovers. And please invite me to go golf with you again.
Even if he guesses wrong, please let him come.
Well, they need him to have more assists than turnovers if they want to win today. Real quick, ending where we started, Michelle. Tim McComber tweeted this, but this is crazy. So over the last 15 games for the Utah Jazz, so they're 10-2 in their last 12. They're 12-3 in their last 15 here. So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So in these last 15 games, the Jazz have the second most wins in the NBA. They have the 10th best offensive rating, which their offensive rating has been in the bottom third of the league for most of the season. They have the 10th best defensive rating. So now they're in top 10, both offensively and defensively. That's a big reason why they're winning as much as they are. They have a top 5 assist percentage as a team right now. So they're sharing the basketball. And then they have the best rebound percentage as well. Well, that'll tell you a lot of why they've gone from what I say was 10-18 December 21st, and then on January 13th they're 20-20.
Zero to hero, just like that.
Yep, there
you go. Quote a movie.
Look at you. Hey, Michelle has some pop.
I know some things. I'm actually a little shocked and amazed that I've been throwing out Disney stuff.
Disney references.
Disney is not my jam at all.
I'm married to the Disney reference in my household. My wife, she can pull Disney quotes like that. It's insane. Because she'll quote them, I'll be like, what's that from? I'm like, I'm guessing Disney, because that's where all her frame of reference seems to come from with all the movies she goes with. But nonetheless, crazy stuff. But yeah, so that tells you kind of in a nutshell, like, okay, you move into top 10 both offensively and defensively, you're rebounding the basketball at a high level, and oh, by the way, you're sharing the basketball. Hey.
That's a recipe to win.
It's a pretty simple recipe. Now, it's much easier said than done, because we sit here on the radio and we talk about it. It's like those guys are actually out there doing it. Now, I do wonder tonight, the Lakers, they win that in-season tournament and it feels like they've like just hit the skids since then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on any given night, LeBron James can shoot his team into any game. He can single-handedly win games. even at 39 years old, which if you're watching, have you seen LeBron much this year, Michelle?
Mm-mm.
Insanity. He is just 21st year in the league, and he's doing things that he did when he was 18 years old.
You know, that's my goal. It's my goal. Like, I am hellbound and determined. I am going to rock the fountain of youth, and I'm going to be young forever. That is just what it's going to be.
Well, we'll see. It will bear watching to see what the Jazz do, because like this Lakers team, they're very star-laden, as they always are. Him and Anthony Davis are great. We had Brian Geltzeiler on earlier this week, and the thing about it is Brian Geltzeiler said that the Jazz need to dump Hillbilly Kobe. Why am I forgetting his name all of a sudden? Austin Reeves. He said
Hillbilly.
That was his nickname coming out of college, Michelle.
That's incredible.
Hillbilly Kobe. He went to Wichita State. It fits perfectly. Do you not know this? Do you not know his nickname?
No, I've never heard that. Oh. That's awesome.
Hillbilly Kobe was his nickname coming out of Wichita State. So, good times. But nonetheless, crazy, crazy stuff. But we'll see. It's 6:30 pregame on that. It'll be a 7:30 tip at the Delta Center. Looking forward to it. You can tune into that here on the KSL Sports Zone. Coming up 12:30, we got a pregame for Utah State. Is that right? 12:30, right? Okay, and then so 1 o'clock tip, Utah State in action at UNLV, so down there in Sin City. Scotty G will be on the call for that. I do wonder how Utah State handles this one at UNLV, because the Rebels, they're interesting. And obviously you're playing on the road here. Early afternoon game, it can screw up guys' schedules because they're so used to, like, basketball players used to play at night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm same thing I'm wondering with BYU today is. Okay, it's 4 o'clock there on the East Coast, but that's still earlier than you guys ever tip off so far this season for the most part. So we'll see how these teams handle it, but it will be interesting. But I am curious how these teams handle it, and obviously the Utah women to – no.
No. Gymnastics.
Utah gymnastics tonight.
Yeah.
And this is the Sprouts Collegiate Quad tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yep, at 2 p.m.
Okay, and so they're playing some, like, they're taking on some really, really good squads in this, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, so this is the best of, some of the best of the best in all of college gymnastics. Obviously, you have number 2 Utah, you have number 1 Oklahoma, LSU's like number 4 or 5, I think, and then UCLA dropped down to, I believe, 12. But, jeez. I mean, still...
So all top 15.
All great teams.
Yeah.
You know, these are teams that come with it. They're some of the best, most entertaining teams in the country. And so it should be a good showdown at the Maverick Center. Or mm-hmm. if you can't be there, check it out on ABC. They're getting a primetime slot. So that's pretty incredible.
It's pretty awesome. And then the Monday, they're right back at it, right? Best, mm-hmm. best of Utah?
Best of Utah. That's less competitive.
Okay.
Well, but, to put it nicely. But hey,
sure.
you know, whatever.
Okay, but here's the thing with gymnastics. Do they need more time off than 24 hours, really, between meets? Or is that a concern? We're over time here, but I just thought about that. I'm like,
you know, I think the idea for Utah scheduling this uh-huh. was to prepare for postseason, which the turnaround is quite a bit like that.
Okay.
It's all on podium, so it's kind of replicating what they should see. Knock on wood, everything goes correctly later on in postseason.
Okay, well, there you go. Any final thoughts?
Just tune in to all the sporty balls.
Yep.
They're all happening today.
And read Michelle at KSLSports.com.
Aw.
Look at that plug real quick. All right, for Alex, for Michelle, I'm Jake. Have a great rest of your Saturday, everybody. Utah State coverage starts at 12:30 right here on the KSL Sports Zone. See you.